यशोदानन्दन ब्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जनरञ्जन यमुनातीरावनजारी हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो 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 हरे हरे जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधे प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद जय निथाय गौर प्रेमानंदे जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरे कृष्ण वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 70 टेक्स्ट 34 टू 37 सो सभाजयित्वा विधिवत् कृतासना परिग्रहम् बभासे सुनृतैर् वाक्यै श्रद्धया तर्पयन् मुनीम् सभाजयित्वा विधिवत् कृतासना परिग्रहम् बभासे सुनृतैर्वाक्यै श्रद्धया तर्पयन् मुनीम् सभाजयित्वा विधिवत् कृतासना परिग्रहम् बभासे सुनृतैर्वाक्यै श्रद्धया तर्पयन् मुनीम् माताजी सभाजयित्वा वर्शिपिंग विधिवत् According to scriptural injunctions, Krita, to him, Narada who had done, Asana, of a seat, Parigraham, acceptance, Babhase, he spoke, Sunritai, truthful and pleasing, Vakyai, with words. Shraddhaya, with reverence. Tarpayan, gratifying. Munim, the sage. Translation. After Narada had accepted the seat offered to him, Lord Krishna honored the sage according to scriptural injunctions and gratifying him with his reverence, spoke the following truthful and pleasing words. Since there is no purport in this verse, we'll read the next few verses. Text 35. Api svit adya lokanam trayanam akuto bhayam nanubhuyan bhagavato lokan paryatato guna. Translation. Lord Krishna said, It is certain that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear. For that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travel at will throughout all the worlds. Text 36. Nahi se viditam kinchil lokeshva ishvara kartasru atha prachhami yushman pandava nam chikirshitam. There is nothing unknown to you within God's creation. Therefore, Please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do. Text 37. Shri Narada Uvacha. Drishta mayate bahuso duratyaya maya vibho vishvas rajascha maina bhuteshu bhumams charatasva shakti bhir వహనేరి వచ్చన్న రుచో నేద్భుతం. శ్రీ నారద సెడ్, ఐ హ్యావ్ సీన్ మెనీ టైమ్స్ ద ఇన్సర్మౌంటబుల్ పవర్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ మాయా, ఓ ఆల్ మైటీ వన్, బై విచ్ యు బివిల్డర్ ఈవెన్ ద క్రియేటర్ ఆఫ్ ద యూనివర్స్ బ్రహ్మ. ఓ ఆల్ ఎన్కాంపాసింగ్ లార్డ్, ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ సర్ప్రైజ్ మీ దట్ యు డిస్గైజ్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్ బై యువర్ ఓన్ ఎనర్జీస్ వైల్ మూవింగ్ అమాంగ్ క్రియేటెడ్ బీయింగ్స్ యాజ్ అ ఫైర్ covers its own light with smoke. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Krishna questioned Narad Muni about the intentions of the Pandavas, the sage replied that the Lord is Himself all-powerful and all-knowing, even to the extent that He can deliver the creator of the universe, Brahma. Narad understood that Lord Krishna desired to kill Jarasandha and was thus beginning to arrange for this pastime by inquiring from Narada about the Pandavas' intentions. Understanding the Lord's own intentions, Narad was astonished when Lord Krishna humbly requested information from him. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalagaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభిష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపా దదామయ్యం దదాతి స్వాపదాంతికం వందేహం శ్రీగురో శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీగురున్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపాం సాగ్రజాతాం సహగణా రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావదూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్య దేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణ పదాం సహగణా లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ నమా ఓం విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రేష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామీనితి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతీ దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశ తారిణే జయ శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార్ శ్రీవాసది గౌర భక్త వృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామో హరే రామో రామ రామో హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామో రామ రామో హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామో రామ రామో హరే హరే సో యు వెల్కమ్ ఎవ్రీవన్ to the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class, this fine morning. We are reading from Canto 10, Chapter 70, Text 34. Translation, after Narada had accepted the seat offered to him, Lord Krishna honored the sage according to scriptural injunctions and gratifying him with his reverence, spoke the following truthful and pleasing words. So, as the verse says, with the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, as Lord Krishna spoke some pleasing words, I beg for the blessings of all Vaishnavas so that I too may be able to speak something which is pleasing and inspiring to all of you sitting here. And if there is something inspiring and pleasing out of it, it's credit goes to all the seniors. And if there is something which is not maybe up to your mark, then the fault lies with myself. So we'll start the discussion today. We'll have a brief recap of what we basically heard over the past few days, in fact, past month. These two chapters about Narada visiting Lord Krishna and Krishna's daily activities has been very lucidly and in detail actually explained by the previous speakers over the past few days. And even yesterday we saw how nicely it was explained about how the quality of surrender applies in our life, and pertaining to the actual relevant verse, how the messenger comes to Lord Krishna posing the message of the kings who are captured by Jarasandha. So, in this context, in the previous verses, we see Narad Muni arrives on the scene suddenly when the messenger comes in the court of Krishna. So as soon as as soon as Narad Muni comes in the court of Krishna, Krishna all of a sudden actually is very happy to have darshan of the great sage Narada. And then what Krishna does is explained in this verse. We find that, in this chapter of Lord Krishna's daily activities, there are descriptions of detailed, minute, small activities that Lord Krishna does. So in the Bhagavatam, what is given, that is, every word has a specific purpose. Nothing is written just like that. So if Krishna stands up, even there is a meaning behind Krishna just standing up. Or if he is offering a seat to someone, if he is speaking some sweet words with reverence, why should the Lord offer reverence? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why should he offer respect and reverence to someone else? We may find, these questions intriguing. But as we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we come to know that there is a meaning behind everything which is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we begin our discussion. As so much has been said basically about these verses for the past few days, I would basically like to concentrate on a particular theme that this particular verse instructs us about. And I've listed down two particular points that is appealing for me personally from this particular verse. The first one being, we find here that Lord Krishna welcomes Narad Muni, he offers him a seat, he gives him sweet words, and with awe and reverence, Krishna actually welcomes Narad Muni. So what does this indicate? This is an indication of codes of conduct. Codes of conduct, who is Krishna? Krishna is a householder in this particular pastime. And Narad Muni represents a saintly personality. So how a householder conducts himself with a saintly personality? That is point number one we can infer from this verse. Another point is, the representation of Vedic culture, the various aspects of Vedic culture. Vedic culture by itself is a very deep concept to understand. So it's impossible on using our own intelligence to fathom even an iota of what Vedic culture could indicate and have, meaning behind it. So Lord Krishna is very merciful. He himself has given so many examples in the Bhagavatam through which we understand how to behave, how to talk, how to brush our teeth. It starts from scratch. It starts from even a child actually learning to how to brush his teeth, how to call his own mother with what name, and what to speak of knowing the knowledge of scriptural injunctions and so on. So one of the lessons to take home from this verse is how Vedic culture is very important. So that will be the theme of today's class, and the discussion will be basing on the importance of Vedic culture and various aspects of Vedic culture. During the discussion, we'll discuss that in detail over the next 20-25 minutes or so. So Vedic culture, it teaches us about two concepts. Broadly, if you see, you can classify Vedic culture into two concepts. What are the two things that Vedic culture will teach us? Number one, how to live in this material world. Number two, how to leave. So these are the two concepts. These are two powerful concepts, very essential for any layman who has taken birth in this material world. So if you know Vedic culture, if someone is practicing Vedic culture, or if you are not practicing, then Krishna indicates through these verses how to practice Vedic culture. So we'll discuss about how to live and how to leave. So today I think we can take, with time constraint, we'll be taking about how to live in the Vedic culture. There are examples quoted in the Srimad Bhagavatam about this particular instance. You might see Krishna is welcoming Narada. So that's a very essential thing. Krishna demonstrates how you receive a guest in your house. Guest reception is another aspect which Krishna highlights through this verse. So I was pondering about some other examples which I could think of in this context. And even in the 10th canto, it was easily found. The 10 chapters from now, in chapter 80, I think the Sudama pastime starts. So similarly, as Krishna welcomed Narada, if you read the Sudama pastime, we'll be coming to it in some months. So Krishna similarly, he leaves his throne, comes down, takes Sudama Brahman. Who is Sudama? Sudama that time is a so-called pauper. He didn't have any money, he didn't have any clothes to wear properly, torn garments he was wearing. And Krishna was he was the king of Dwarka that time. Although they were friends at some point when they were studying together, but that time when Sudama came to meet Krishna, there was a vast difference between the stature of Krishna and the stature of Sudama socially. But Krishna very nicely, even there he has indicated with his actions about how, what is the code of conduct for us to follow, for generations to follow. It's an apt example. Another example which I thought of was from around chapter 52, Rukmini. Rukmini sends a messenger to Lord Krishna. When she wants to express her desire to marry Lord Krishna. So she sends a Brahmana. And this Brahmana comes to Lord Krishna. Krishna is in Dwarka. So Krishna is very pleased to see this Brahmana. So upon seeing the Brahmana, the culture that Krishna is trying to inculcate in us, what does Krishna say? Krishna gets down from his golden throne that he is sitting on. He comes down. What he does? He makes the Brahmana sit on an asana. He worships the Brahmana. He gives him some sweet words. He gives him something to eat. Then he inquires about the Brahmana's health. He inquires about whether he has taken rest. He makes provisions for the Brahmana because he is undertaken a long ardent journey to reach Dwarka. So he gives him proper facilities to take rest. And once the Brahmana takes rest, then while taking rest, it is described that Krishna enters the room of the Brahmana slowly without the Brahmana noticing him. He goes and takes the 2 feet of the Brahmana, puts it upon his lap and nicely starts massaging the feet of the Brahmana. And while massaging, Lord Krishna poses 3 questions to the Brahmana. These 3 questions also give us an insight into the aspects, various aspects of Vedic culture. So what does Krishna ask the Brahmana that time? Number one, are your religious practices sanctioned by senior authorities? And is it proceeding without any great difficulty? And the third one is your mind always fully satisfied? So generally when we meet someone new, what do we ask? On mundane level we ask, how is you, how's your health, what is you doing, what you're studying, how are your family members. So Lord Krishna, none of it is inquiring. If you see these 3 inquiries, this is what Lord Krishna teaches us, that this is what one has to inquire about. So it's all about Vedic culture. And why does Lord Krishna say, is your mind fully satisfied? The Bhagavatam explains that Krishna says a Brahmana who is not satisfied, he can roam from one planet to the other throughout the 3 worlds. But if he is not satisfied, he will not be, his mind will not be peaceful. He will be completely agitated and create havoc. But what is the symptoms of a satisfied Brahmana? A person who is satisfied in nature, although he might be very poor, he might have nothing to eat, nothing to sleep, nothing to drink, but one who is satisfied, a satisfied Brahmana, the indications, the symptoms are, even if he has no money, he'll have 3 qualities which highlight that. Number one is, he'll be prideless, he'll be saintly and peaceful. So these are the qualities of a satisfied Brahmana that Krishna brings forth in the Bhagavatam in the 50th, 52nd chapter. And Krishna says that to this personality, to a person who is satisfied in such aspects, I bow down my head to this person. So the Supreme Lord bows down his head to a person who actually is satisfied within his mind. So what to speak? If you want the attention of Krishna, we have to practice, we have to practice Vedic culture. So this was the culture prevalent during Vedic times. Krishna, he set an example by worshipping Narada. In this verse, we are able to see that. And how did Krishna do it? Acharya say he did it very religiously. It was not as a matter of fact he performed the activity. He engaged in it very religiously, very meticulously. And there was a science behind it. What science? Krishna was actually trained to perform what he was doing. You might imagine what training you require to do all these simple activities. But if you actually introspect and analyze, from his childhood, Krishna was trained to respect. How? During his childhood, Krishna and Balaram had studied in Gurukul in the ashram of Sandipani Muni. So, That's the symbolization of a Vedic culture. Children are usually studying under the tutelage or care of a bona fide guru. Guru doesn't mean a sannyasi or brahmachari. Guru, a grahastha can be a very nice guru. So similarly, it's explained that how Krishna and Balram were studying under the care and shelter of Sandipuni Muni and his wife, and where he learned, I mean, great things, but also basic things like how to welcome guests, how to dwell in the forest. Krishna was a cowherd boy and also a king, but the training imparted during the Vedic culture we see was right from how to brush your teeth, how to wash your clothes, how to get up, how to sit down. These basic moral codes of conduct, also they teach philosophy, that is at a later stage, but in the initial phase, education is all about experiential learning. So, Krishna was trained to perform in all these aspects. So, it's very nicely indicated through these verses that how Krishna performed what he did. Through the three pastimes, we can easily make that out. Also, it's stated that two people are very important in a child's life. Who are they? A mother and a teacher. If there is these missing elements, then the child is missing something great in life. Why? Because more than 50% of what the child imbibes in itself, the mother and the teacher have the most important role to play in the child's life. So, as we discussed, Krishna underwent all this training. I mean, the ancient system states that from the age of 5 years to the age of 25 years, one goes and stays in the Gurukul, in the ashram of a guru, and he, in the material world, the perverted form is a boarding school. But what happens? Why are you sent to a boarding school? Because the parents do not want to take care of their child. They do not have time, or they do not want to spend that much time, invest that time on the children, or husband is working, wife is working, no time to take care of their child, and they find international schools, they find boarding schools to put their child in. So here Vedic education, Vedic culture, it presents us, gives us a dimension about how to bring up your child. So these verses in Bhagavatam are very scientific, and whatever is written, everything has a deep meaning rooted to it. So what is Gurukul, guru and wife? I mean, not only the guru, but the wife also has a very equal and important role to play in the upbringing of students who are enrolled in the Gurukul. Like, the wholesome nourishment is given to the child, not just intellectual aspect, but as we discussed, right from getting up in the morning to administering and taking care of a kingdom. So it's a whole gamut and a whole vast plate that the child fulfills. And when the child comes out after 25 years, it's up to him to how to deal with the world, and he's completely trained to face the material world. Provided your teacher is actually in parampara and you go to a bona fide school. So training and varnashram, they go hand in hand. What is the importance of Vedic culture? We're discussing all about Vedic culture. So one important aspect that the Mahabharata states that from the Gurukul of Dronacharya, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, they were studying under the tutelage of Dronacharya. So, here the culture represents how a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, all these people, they respect custom tailor-made training in the Gurukul. It was not like the same education imparted to 20 or 100 people enrolled in a classroom. So, the Guru's role was, he used to basically have that intelligence and have that power to discriminate who has a particular quality. If a student is exhibiting qualities of a Brahmana, then in that training module over a period of years, the guru would take pains to have and design custom-made modules for every individual. If he is exhibiting a quality of a Brahmana, then the guru would give him some kind of philosophical discussions and more of that on his plate. A person or a pupil is exhibiting symptoms of a Vaishya, then the training would be important in aspects of taking care of cows, agriculture, and how to do business, vyavahar. So all those aspects would be more prominently explained along with the aspects which will help you live in the material world. The basic curriculum will be there, but along with it, there was a custom-made module inculcated for a particular individual according to his nature. And what about a Kshatriya? For a Kshatriya it is said that everything was taught. Why? Because Kshatriya, a king, Kshatriyas are generally king, they are meant to rule. So for Kshatriyas they need to know everything, something of everything. So, they used to be taught the philosophy, they used to be taught scriptures, they used to be taught how to rule the kingdom, how to graze cows and how to manage. So a Kshatriya had to know everything. I mean, what he uses, that is up to him when he rules the kingdom. He has Brahmanas to consult. But while when training is concerned, the Kshatriya was given overall training. So to understand the aspect is that every individual, was imparted custom-made training in the Gurukul. It is demonstrated from an example from the Mahabharata. So there were the Pandavas and the Kauravas studying in the Gurukul of Dronacharya. So Dronacharya on the very first day, he tells his pupils that, listen to me, this is a very important instruction. So Dronacharya says, listen children, the first day in the life of a student is the most important that will be in your life. Why? Because that will determine what are the subjects that you will study in the rest of your life, what knowledge you will acquire, how much you will acquire, and what are the interests in your field, that will be indicated on the first day of your acquiring knowledge. And also he says that how much you will learn, what you will learn and how much you will be indicated on the very first day of your education system itself. So the guru also has to be equally qualified in order to bring this out. So Dronacharya was a very astute teacher. He was very sharp. Just by observing his pupils, he could easily make out what was the nature and the thought process behind each pupil. Just for an example in case study, this was sometime later on after the Pandavas and the Kauravas spent some more time in the Gurukul, once upon a time what happened was, we all know about that incident where a bird was situated on the tree. Dronacharya actually set up that, and then all his wards were standing in line. And the Guru says, okay, now today is a test for all of us. What you need to do, everyone will come forward one by one and I want you to take aim and pierce this target. What is that? The bird sitting on the tree. Pierce the eye of the bird. So, first Yudhishthir Maharaj comes forward. So Dronacharya asks Yudhishthir, okay Yudhishthir, take aim. Are you ready? He says, yes. So then Dronacharya says, okay, tell me, what do you observe? So the answer that Yudhishthir gives now is, Yudhishthir says, right now I see the bird, I see the branch on which the bird is sitting, I see another branch which is situated behind the branch on which the bird is sitting. Also I see there is a nest where the bird has made a nest which is situated on the branch behind the branch on which the bird actually is seated. And then Dronacharya says, so that means I have to be very careful when I release the arrow. Then he says, also there is an ant hill which is there at the foot of the tree. So also that means I have to be doubly careful that when I release the arrow, neither the branch falls down and thereby causes harm to the ant hill, because the majority of the population of ants were situated down, nor do I in any way be responsible for destroying the nest which is there behind in the other branch. So then Dronacharya listens to all these things and then he says, very well done, excellent observations. And Dronacharya says, I'm very proud to know that you have observed so much in just one little thing that I showed you. And then he says, this is the hallmark of, you have shown the symptoms, the initial symptoms that are required for any great leader to manifest. Basically, these are the symptoms which manifest for and indicate that he is going to become a great leader in future. So Dronacharya that time, he tells his pupils who are standing there that what Yudhishthir has just pointed out are basically, it's the symptom of a great leader. But then he says in the same breath that this doesn't qualify you to be a great archer. So move aside, go behind. So the next is Bhima, and then Bhima comes and then usually says, along with what Yudhishthir said, I also see a lot of fruits which are there on the tree. So then what Dronacharya says, okay, you move aside, take 100 rounds of the ashram. And then Arjuna comes next, Duryodhan comes next. And Duryodhan, he takes aim and Duryodhan says, okay Gurudev, I am ready, tell me, should I shoot? So Dronacharya says, wait, what do you see? So Duryodhan says, I see the bird and I see that branch of the tree. Tell me, what should I shoot down? Tell me fast. So Dronacharya says, what is the reason behind your being in such a haste? I mean, okay, since you are so eager to shoot, you shoot the arrow in such a way that I want that arrow to pierce the eye of the bird in such a way that neither the bird falls down and nor the branch falls down. So Duryodhan is completely perplexed and then he says, how is that possible? How on earth is that possible that I shoot an arrow, pierce it through the eye of the bird, neither the bird dies nor the branch collapses? This is impossible, Gurudev. So then Dronacharya says, an important lesson for a student to learn from this particular pastime is that before you release, for a Kshatriya, for a warrior, before he releases an arrow, he should know, he should have complete control over the aftermath or the consequences that lead to his firing the arrow. Since Duryodhan couldn't control his arrow and didn't have control over the arrow, so Dronacharya instructed him, you restrain till you develop complete control, till you have controlled your senses and develop that quality of actually being able to have complete control over what, I mean, the arrows you release, till that time you should not use that. Of course, what Duryodhan did, the same, so we see from here that Duryodhan also received the same training, Yudhishthir also received the same training, Arjuna also received the same training. So what is it that distinguished and separated Duryodhan to become what he became and Yudhishthir to become what he became? So the Mahabharata very nicely explains that you can take a horse to the water but you can't make the horse forcibly drink the water. So all that Duryodhan had, Duryodhan had the facility and the luxury of having a guru like Dronacharya. The same knowledge was inculcated, imparted from by Dronacharya to Duryodhan and to Yudhishthir, but there was a difference in receptivity. I mean, the signals of Duryodhan were not that fine-tuned as the signals of Yudhishthir. So Duryodhan could only intercept some things, selected things of what Dronacharya was there to teach as to the majority of the sections which Yudhishthir could easily grasp. So that's a very important quality we learn from the Mahabharata. Another time, this is all about Vedic aspects which we are, discussing. So to highlight that, we'll be having more stories and kind of I'll try to highlight that with the case of more examples. So in the Mahabharata, there is another example in the same Gurukul when Dronacharya also, he was training his pupils to become kings. So at one point of time, he questions pupils about what will you react, how will you react when your kingdom is attacked by an enemy. So Ashwatthama first answers, if the enemy is weak, then Ashwatthama says, then I will be, I'll completely destroy the enemy if the enemy is a weaker one who's attacking me. And if the enemy is a stronger one, I'll be diplomatic with the enemy. So then Yudhishthir Maharaj next answers. And Yudhishthir Maharaj says otherwise. Yudhishthir Maharaj reasons that we have to show diplomacy with the weaker enemy. Why? We should make friendship with the weaker enemy. Because the weaker enemy, what is our advantages in making friendship and diplomacy with the weaker enemy is that the weaker enemy, number one, will never dare to attack us in future. And also, it will be beneficial for our kingdom as well as the citizens of our kingdom to increase trade and relations with the weaker enemy. And what will happen if you actually not attack the stronger enemy and in fact become diplomatic? One should not be diplomatic with the stronger enemy. If an enemy is strong, then Yudhishthir Maharaj says, according to Niti, one should attack the stronger enemy and not be diplomatic. Why? So Yudhishthir Maharaj gives the answer that when you attack the stronger enemy, what happens is, even if you don't attack, what happens is the enemy will take you cheaply in future if you compromise with the enemy who is strong. And all through your pact and your treaty and agreements that you sign with the enemy, in future also the enemy is bound to take you cheaply or to take you as, you will always be considered as a weaker one. So what will be end result be? The subjects, the forces, the armed forces and the subjects will develop, their self-confidence will be dented highly. and that will be detrimental for the progress of one's kingdom. So Yudhishthir Maharaj says, diplomacy with weaker as both kingdoms, citizens will benefit, trade and commerce will flourish, and weak will dare not attack. So thus battling a braver enemy is more beneficial than and diplomacy with a weaker enemy is also justified. So these were the lessons. I mean, you can see how this Vedic culture is so very important. Just by these small things which are given in the Mahabharata and the scriptures, when we actually discuss, there is a deep meaning to it. So they are very nicely pointed out. Further, what happened to Duryodhan when this question was posed? Duryodhan, his only answer was, either the weak or the strong, I just want to crush the enemy immediately. So that is an indication of false pride, false ego. So if you want to crush the enemy immediately, either it be weak or it be strong, the consequences will be what Duryodhan faced when he grew up to be. So the important point is, right from the childhood, the impressions that one imbibes or the impressions that one is drilled into a child, and the impressions that the child also accepts, those same things represent to what the child, when he grows into a mature adult, it turns out to be. Like the difference between the reaction of Yudhishthir Maharaj and Duryodhan to the same question of ruling the kingdom posed by Dronacharya. Yudhishthir Maharaj turned out to be an astute administrator later on in his life as compared to Duryodhan, who became an evil-minded Kshatriya. So this is the week of Diwali, and we all know that Diwali, one reason that signifies Diwali is the welcoming back of Ram and Sita to Ayodhya, wherein all the citizens of Ayodhya welcome their king by burning lamps, and all over Ayodhya lamps were burned. So Mother Sita, there is another example in Vedic scriptures where Mother Sita, we can see she was trained from childhood. We are discussing about the concept of training. So Mother Sita was trained from childhood to observe Mother Sita's father, Janak Maharaj. So in childhood it's described that she used to observe her father, how Janak Maharaj was a pious and very nice king. He used to invite sadhus to his place. He used to nicely welcome them, serve them and take care of them. So as a child, when Sita was in the house, she used to observe all these things. And she grew up naturally with all these qualities. And furthermore, she grew in this qualities more. She learned from her very nice husband, Lord Ram, and also father-in-law, Dasharath, in etiquette and vyavahar. So Mother Sita shows this, this is proved amply to make this point clear when Ravan comes in Panchvati to kidnap Mother Sita. But what happens? Ravan comes in the disguise of an ascetic or a brahmana. He wears saffron robes, and it's described that Ravan approaches Mother Sita reciting stotras, mantras. So in disguise, actually Ravan comes there as a brahmana. Externally, it might seem as though a sadhu has come to your place. So according to codes of conduct of a householder, what is Sita supposed to do? So there Sita exhibits it very nicely. Sita gives alms to Ravan. What he wants? He wants some rice. So even though, Mother Sita might have known, in hindsight we can say, that's all from an intellectual view. From the human aspect, if we analyze this pastime, we can say that how this training, which was deep imbued in Mother Sita, she naturally was, that was her nature, to serve sadhus. At what cost? That is, the cost was paid, but then this training helped Mother Sita. It was naturally ingrained in her to serve the sadhu. But then, in the same breath, also she deals with Ravan in a different way in Ashok Vatika, when she realizes that is not a sadhu actually, that's an asur. So Kamb Ramayana very nicely gives 10 reasons what Mother Sita, tells Ravana during the Ashok Vatika episode. We'll not go into that today, maybe some other time. But it's really interesting as to how Mother Sita gives Ravan a befitting reply when Ravan comes to entice Mother Sita in Ashok Vatika. So that's also a part of Vedic training. You be courteous to a person if he is really saintly, but if he is not, then you give him proper codes of conduct. Act according to the proper codes of conduct. Another very important example from scriptures is Draupadi. Draupadi's example is kind of the epitome which highlights the Vedic culture. We can say that how Draupadi was from such a princely kingdom, and how Drupad Maharaj arranged for her Swayambar so that Arjuna himself No other person, only Arjuna should be Draupadi's husband. So what happens when Draupadi comes to the forest on the very first day of her marriage? She's actually, from her palatial kingdom, she's forced to come down to the forest life. And Draupadi has to undergo the austerities of a forest dweller. So it is explained in the Mahabharata that Mother Kunti, how she makes the famous statement of share it, and we all know the story in detail, I won't go through it. But then Mother Kunti observes this important thing that Draupadi does. This is just a detail which is mentioned in the scripture, which is not so emphasized regularly. But since we are talking about Vedic culture and training, I would like to emphasize on that and stress on that. So Draupadi was cooking for the Pandavas. So Mother Kunti is all the while observing this. This is the first day. So Draupadi is cooking for the Pandavas. And then what does she do? She divides the food into two parts. Out of that one part, she makes two another parts. One part is kept aside for the cow. Another part is kept aside for the guest. And from the rest of the part, she divides it into another half. One is kept for serving Bhima. And the rest, she serves the other four Pandavas. So, all these aspects, so when Mother Kunti sees this, she is completely satisfied. Mother Kunti is highly satisfied to see that what nice training Draupadi has received. By the way, she is actually, demonstrating the principle of sharing and dividing the food. Mother Kunti then asks Draupadi that how will we take rest tonight? Since you have come and joined the family, how do we take rest? All this while I was living with the Pandavas. So Draupadi, she answers and she tells Mother Kunti that all the five brothers will sleep in a straight line. Below that you can sleep, O Mother Kunti. And under the shelter of your lotus feet, I shall take rest. So then, Kunti was supremely happy when Draupadi made this statement. And she was completely satisfied with the etiquette and vyavahar that Draupadi had inculcated from her parents and from her upbringing. So the idea is, you can say woman empowerment and so on and so forth. But we can say that even Shastras indicate there is a definite role for women to play and highlight in Vedic society. From the role of Mother Sita, from the role that Draupadi had to play, we can easily say that in Varnashram, woman has a very important role to play, an equally important role as a husband. If the proper training, proper culture is imbibed, is given to a woman, and if she follows it to the nail, to the book, then it's like a nut and bolt. You can say, if a husband is a bolt and a woman is a nut, you can't say that if the nut is missing, you will realize what's the situation of a bolt. The entire gadget or whatever it binds together will unbind. A bolt will not be successful as long as the nut doesn't basically encompass it. So the idea is the importance of woman is very much there, since Vedic traditions and Shastras mention very beautifully in it. So there is a beautiful shloka in the Hitopadesh. Since we are short of time, I'll just go through it fast. So it says that as designs carved on a clay pot can never be changed after firing, impressions in the minds of young students remain for lifetimes together. We see that a potter, when the clay is wet, he can make n number of designs. He can make a design and rub the clay again. He can make another design and rub the clay. As long as you don't basically burn it and completely, it undergoes change of fire. As long as it is heated, then the design can never be changed for life. You actually have to break it then. Similarly, impressions in the mind of young students, they are so deeply imbibed that those impressions remain for lifelong. So this is Vedic culture. A young student in his childhood, if he is not trained properly, whatever conditionings, whatever impressions he has in his young life, they will be very hard to erase over a period of time. We can all vouch for it, that although we are in the ashram, we are wearing these clothes, sitting here, talking big, big philosophies, but we have all our conditionings to follow. Each and every one of us surely has some conditioning, some anartha we are fighting at our own ends. And, I myself have not been, it's not like from 5 to 25 I have lived in a Gurukul and undergone that Vedic training. So I have certain conditioning, certain anarthas I'm struggling with fighting. So The importance of Vedic culture is if a student is given this training right from childhood, then it becomes very secure, and then Krishna consciousness, it comes naturally to such people. And they also be ready to face the world. It's not that they are foolish when they go outside. It's a mixture of both devotion as well as academically you are, worthy to be in the material world. So it's like, samskaras are very important. And conditionings, they are there with us for the rest of our life. So bhakti is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. That's the take home message of this particular instance. Another aspect of Vedic training where we see good training versus bad training is aptly demonstrated by the example of Gandhari. You can say, this is just to analyze on a human platform. Now Gandhari was married to Dhritarashtra. She blindfolded herself. Now Gandhari didn't blind, she was not blind from birth. When she married Dhritarashtra, she actually took the vow of, she blindfolded herself. Why? Because she wanted to experience what her husband was experiencing since birth. But then after a few years, Duryodhan was born. So if we analyze this, she had all the facility in the world to remove her patti or the blindfold and take care of Duryodhan and kind of give him the culture, the training, all the more. Why? Because it was already predicted that the ill omens and everything were there. But still Gandhari was kind of rigid and she refrained from, she never thought of removing the blindfold. She was attached to the principle of being chaste to Dhritarashtra and keeping blindfolded. So internally they both were blind to the sins Duryodhan was committing. What happened in the net result was in the young age, Duryodhan, who got hold of him? The evil minded Shakuni. So because in the youth, in the childhood, Duryodhan was trained by Shakuni, whose intentions were evil and very clear right from the beginning what Shakuni's intentions were. So at every point, Shakuni was poisoning Duryodhan, poisoning the mind of Duryodhan. So if the parents do not inculcate right values in the children right from childhood, they have no one else to blame but themselves. So this is demonstrated aptly, or this is one lesson I thought we can learn from the Mahabharata. In opposition to this, we see that how Pandavas the five people were trained very nicely in the forest. For 12 years, King Pandu, along with his two wives, they trained the Pandavas very nicely in all subjects. And then the end result, we see how Pandavas grew up to be in future. So the point I'm trying to make is, we have two aspects where we see Vedic culture, training, so it's very important, they go hand in hand. Also, to conclude, I would like to say that education system in modern day, this was one of the points that Govind Prabhu was mentioning, that modern day education is skill based as to Vedic education, which is wholesome. So Vedic education is not only skill based, it has values to mood for, it is character based, and also it has a definite purpose. So when you have something which is wholesome in regards to, it has all these four things. If you have a doctor, a chartered accountant, an engineer, a lawyer, or so called and so forth, but only if they have skills, those are all skills we acquire. A sportsman, he acquires skills to excel in his field. But if the values, if the character, if there is no purpose in the life of all, of every individual, then the whole purpose of the life is defeated. The skills might be there. So modern education basically emphasizes on the skill aspect and neglects the other three aspects. So it is very important to undertake Vedic education and also inculcate these values which are highlighted by Krishna by how he welcomes Narada and other personalities in the Bhagavatam. And another point which Krishna highlights in this verses is about guest reception. So briefly mentioning, we all know this verse about Atithi Devo Bhava. So we all have heard this Atithi Devo Bhava. But it's very interesting, I was told, one devotee actually told me the source of this shloka. It's there in the Taittiriya Upanishad in Sikshavalli. So under that segment we have Matra Devo Bhava, Pitra Devo Bhava and Atithi Devo Bhava. So there it mentions, this shloka comes in the Taittiriya Upanishad. So there they mention that an atithi or a guest has to be worshipped like a god. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was very nicely explaining that how home deity worship is compared to welcoming deities as you treat them as a guest in your house. And temple deity worship, Krishna is God, home deity worship is guest. So how do you worship a guest? Krishna demonstrates in Bhagavatam, and they have a correlation to deity worship also. What do we do for an aarti? If you analyze, you offer dhoop, you offer deep, you offer incense, you offer argya, you offer an asan first of all, you offer bhoga, you make provisions for the Lord to take rest. So all these things that you do in worshipping a deity, Lord Krishna similarly, in what we saw in the initial phases, how he deals with the Brahman messenger, how he deals with Sudama, how he deals with another example that I quoted, Lord Krishna aptly demonstrates for future generations to basically see that these are the codes of conduct for us to follow. So these are all very aptly demonstrated through these verses. So this is what I thought we would discuss through these verses. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Nithai Gaur Premanande.